lacking another island, he still could have gone far enough, landed in the ocean, and used his telescope to watch from there. It was a nice plan, foiled by a raging storm and an unexpected jungle of mad vines. His telescope had joined the metal detritus at the bottom of Kithrop's world sea, along with most of the wreckage of his solar plane. Tom rose carefully to his feet. Food and warmth made it merely an exercise in controlled agony. Rummaging through his few belongings, he tore a long, narrow strip of cloth from the tattered ruins of his sleeping bag. The swatch of tough, insew silk seemed adequate. The Psi-bomb felt heavy and substantial in his hand. It was hard to imagine the globe stuffed with powerful illusions, a super-potent counterfeit, ready to burst free on command. He set the timer for 2 hours and thumbed the safety release, arming the thing. He laid it carefully into his makeshift sling. Tom knew he was being dramatic. Distance wouldn't help all that much. Sensors all over the Kithrop system would light up when it went off. He might as well set it off at his feet. Still, one never knew. Might as well toss it as far away as he could. He let the sling sway a few times to get the feel of it. Then he began swinging it. Slowly at first, he built up momentum while a strange feeling of well-being spread outward from his chest into his arms and legs. Fatigue seemed to fall away. He started to sing. Oh, Daddy was a caveman. He fought in skins, no shirts. He dreamed of lights up in the sky while scratching in the dirt. Your ETs and your stars. Oh, Daddy the bold fighter slew his cousins, fourth and third. He dreamed of peace eternally and died speared to the earth. You ETs and your stars. Oh, Daddy was a lover, and yet he beat his wife. He dreamed, longing for sanity, regretting all his life. You ETs and your stars. Yes, and Daddy was a leader. He dreamed, yet still told lies. He got the frightened masses to put missiles in the skies. You ETs and your stars. My daddy was unlearned, but ever on he tried. He hated his damned ignorance and struggled with his pride. He stepped up on a bootstrap, then, and upon nothing, cried. That tragic orphan willed to me a mind and heart, then died. So scorn me as a wolfling, sneer at my orphan scars. But tell me, boys, what's your excuse? You ETs and your stars. You ETs and your stars. Tom's shoulders flexed as he took a step. His arm snapped straight, and he released the sling. The bomb sailed high into the night, whirling like a top. The spinning sphere shone briefly, still climbing, sparkling, until it disappeared from sight. He listened, but never heard it land. Tom stood still for a while, breathing deeply. Well, he thought at last, that built an appetite. I have 2 hours to eat, tend my wounds, and prepare a shelter. Any time I get after that, O Lord, will be accepted with humble gratitude. He laid the ragged strip of cloth over his shoulder and turned to prepare himself a meal by starlight. Part 5. Concussion. In a world older and more complex than ours, they move finished and complete, gifted with extensions of the senses we have lost or never attained, living by voices we shall never hear. They are other nations caught with ourselves in the net of life and time. Henry Bateson. Chapter 46. Sound. It was evening, and the Kikwi were leaving for their hunting grounds. Saut heard them squeaking excitedly as they gathered in a clearing west of the toppled drill tree. The hunters passed not far from the pool on their way to a rock chimney on the southern slope of the island, chittering and puffing their lung sacs in pomp. Saut listened until the abos were gone. Then he sank a meter below the surface and blew depressed bubbles. Nothing was going right. Denny had changed, and he didn't like it. Instead of her usual delightful skittishness, she virtually ignored him. Worse, she had listened to two of his best limericks and answered seriously, completely missing the delicious double entendres. In spite of the importance of her studies of the Kikwi, Takata Jim had ordered her also to analyze the drill tree system for Charles Dart. Twice, she had gone into the water to collect samples from below the metal mound. She had ignored Saut's nuzzling advances, or even more disturbing, petted him absently in return. Saut realized that for all of his previous efforts to break her down, he hadn't really wanted her to change, at least not this way. He drifted unhappily until a tether attached to one of the sleds brought him up short, reminding him of the worst affront of all. His new assignment kept him linked to this electrical obscenity, chafed and cramped in a tiny pool while his real work was out on the open sea with the pre-sentients. When Jillian and Kipiru left, he had assumed their absence would free him to do pretty much what he wanted. Ha! No sooner had the pilot and physician left than did Toshio step in and assume command. I should have been able to talk rings around him. How in the five galaxies did the boy manage to get the upper hand? But here he was, stuck monitoring a damned robot for a pompous, egocentric chimpanzee who cared only about rocks. The dumb little robot didn't even have a brain one could talk to. You don't have conversations with microprocessors. You tell them what to do, then helplessly watch the disaster when they take you literally. His harness gave off a chime. It was time to check on the probe. Saut clucked a sarcastic response. Yes, in duty, lord and master, metal moron and disaster. Beep again. I'll work faster. Saut brought his left eye even with the sled's screen. He sent a pulse code to the robot, and a stream of data returned. The bot had finally digested the most recent rock sample. He ordered the probe's small memory emptied into the sled's databanks. Toshio had run him through the drill until Saud could control the bot almost unconsciously. He made it anchor one end of a monofilament line to the rough rock, then lower itself another 50 meters. The old explanation for the hole beneath the metal mound had been discarded. The drill tree couldn't have needed to dig a tunnel a kilometer deep in search of nutrients. It shouldn't have been able to pierce the crust that far. The mass of the drill root was clearly too great to have been rotated by the modest tree that once stood atop the mound. The amount of material excavated wouldn't fit atop 10 metal mounds. It was found as sediment all around the high ridge on which the mound sat. To Saut, these mysteries weren't enticing. They only proved once again that the universe was weird, and that maybe humans and dolphins and chimps ought to wait a while before challenging its deeper puzzles. The robot finished its descent. Saut made it reach out and seize the cavity wall with diamond-tipped claws, then retract its tether from above. Down in stages it would go. For this little machine, there would be no rising. Saut felt that way himself sometimes, especially since coming to Kithrop. He didn't really expect ever to leave this deadly world. Fortunately, the probe sampling routine was fairly automatic once triggered. Even Charles Dart should have little excuse to complain, unless... Saut cursed. There it was again. The static that had plagued the probe since it had passed the half-kilometer mark. Toshio and Kipiru had worked on it and couldn't find the problem. The crackling was unlike any static Saut had ever heard. not that he was an expert on static. It had a syncopation of sorts, not all that unpleasant to listen to, actually.